from Akron, Ohio. This is episode 155 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are going to talk about the trope heroic VSOD, not BDSM. Not to be confused. should we leave that in? Or? Yeah. All right.
Yeah. What would that be? Anyway.
Anywho, this was a trope recommended to us from Paul in the UK. We're going to talk about heroic BSOD and then our top five favorite examples of heroic BSOD. As always, I am your host, Nick, and today I'm joined by...
Sir.
And Kyle.
So, heroic BSOD, I'm just going to read straight from the sauce. It is a stunning revelation or horrible event affects a character or someone they care deeply about, leaving them shocked to the point of mentally shutting down for a while, analogous to the blue screen of death, or BSOD. The blue screen of death, it's something that computers used to do. Where you'd get like just a blue screen or sometimes a blue screen with a little bit of white text, and it meant that your computer was boned for the time being. I think as time went on, we started to see more hourglass of death. The term I've heard at work nowadays is the spinning wheel of death.
The red ring of death, if you have a 360.
The red ring of death? Okay, I haven't seen that. I have a Switch, which has not died.
Yeah,
I don't think there is one.
Probably not yet.
But yeah, so anyways, it's the heroic BSOD is somebody having kind of just a temporary shutdown,
like a glitch
due to a traumatic event. Yeah, or a traumatic whatever shock, as it were.
You saying the blue screen, I for some reason I didn't know what BSOD stood for. But there's a GameCube game, I think it's called Eternal Darkness, where the game would glitch out and give you like a fake error screen, and like it would like
freak you out.
Yeah, freak people out, or it would fake turn down the volume of your TV and like completely.
That's pretty funny.
Destroy
actually.
People. Yeah, it was really smart and got a lot of people.
Well, it's good that you brought that up because I forgot to mention this is. Another trope in our series of springtime for video game tropes, as the blue screen of death is something that we see in computer games, video games, things like that. Although the heroic BSOD, that's something that I think falls a lot into, you know, war films, action TV shows, things like that. If, you know, the character's buddy dies, but is it something we really see in video games? It's kind of a hard trope to do.
Yeah, I have a couple examples, but yeah, I think it was definitely easier to find movie examples, TV show examples.
And part of that is just like, you don't want to, I'm playing a video game and now my character is just going to sit there for a minute while I watch.
I mean, there are some instances in video games where you're fighting somebody and they use an attack that freezes you or prevents you from attacking, and I guess that technically could be
but that's
example,
more a physical ailment than a psychological
so taking
this would be more like Sonic and Tails are going somewhere and Dr. Robotnik like slices Tails' throat open and he's like bleeding on the ground. Sonic just watches in horror.
Whoa,
that got real dark.
I'm saying.
But like that's exactly why I'm saying
we don't see this very much.
Actually, going off of that, does it count when the reaction is the person participating, like the viewer, you know? Like, I'm sure there's been a lot of times in movies when you're such in shock from what just happened that you yourself turn off while you're watching it, kind of.
No, I don't think that counts.
Because there's definitely a lot of...
The Michelle Williams speech in Manchester by the Sea definitely does that to me, as we've established in a text chain with Truex.
We should also say that when we get to our examples, there's going to be a lot of spoilers, I'd say. Mostly because I think we're describing...
Traumatic
big,
moments.
Big events, in games and movies.
Yeah, it does make sense. Do we ever see it in like a comedy? I
mean, that's the thing. We have to, right? I guess my favorite scene in Dumb and Dumber at the end when
he
kind of blanks out and he hallucinates for a little bit about. Yeah, that's.
I guess it does work if it's played for laughs.
Yeah,
it can be pretty funny.
Is he really? He's not the hero in that movie. That's the thing. They're like, I love that movie because it's, they're really terrible people.
Yeah.
I watched Kingpin for the first time the other day.
For the first time?
Yeah.
Really?
Man. It's Bill Murray, movie. That's
he's
like...
He's a hoot in that movie.
I mean, I think hoot is accurate, yet it's a serious understatement. Because yeah. as like, just the performance like of a villain, that's like Heath Ledger levels of just abandon of all social constraints. Like okay. I feel like Bill Murray in that was just so over the top that...
You're not wrong.
He reached a totally different level. Like it was barely comedy at points. Like when he's rolling around on the ground sweating.
Like, you're not wrong. That's not the first comparison I would have come up with.
Keith Ledger's Joker.
Yeah.
I think it's accurate. Kyle, you should watch it. It's like, I mean, just as a performance, I've never seen anything quite like it. Except maybe that's the thing, Heath Ledger, like a performance that led to someone's death.
Like, jeez,
Bill Murray and Kingpin. Jeez, man, what an awful character too.
I like Woody in that movie too.
Yeah, he's good. It's just
Randy Quaid. I could take relief in most things. Yeah,
and in that, it's I don't know something about his character and that is weird and sad.
Yeah,
I mean, it's yeah.
Randy Quaid, one of the best Quaids.
Yeah, that's true.
How do you guys feel about Dennis Quaid? He's okay.
Well,
he's all right.
I think Enemy Mine is his best film.
I haven't seen it.
Opposite Louis Gossett Jr. Mm. It might be. I guess he can have an only best.
There's something about Dennis Quaid that like rubs me the wrong. He feels his like face. He should always. He feels like he should always play like a boring dad.
Mm-hmm. There's like a pretension. It's just something about him.
Yeah, but a boring dad, like, in a movie that's not supposed to be boring.
Yeah, and I feel like he got cast in movies that required, like, much more exciting personalities. Like, three of my favorite movies as a kid. I mean, Dreamscape, Enemy Mine, and Inner Space. You would think that I was, like, a serious Dennis Quaid fan.
Fanboy?
Because those are, like, some of my favorite movies. Yet, he's, like, easily the worst thing about him.
Let's go a little bit more off the rails since we're already leaning over. How do you feel about the slang term Stan? Have you heard this?
Yeah.
No.
I don't like it at all.
Well,
Stan is like a super fan.
Or yeah, like I don't like
people, it. People use it as like an obsessed fan. Stan is in the Eminem song, Stan.
And that's the thing. I think anything empowering or referencing Eminem is kind of sketchy and gross to me. That's what really bothers me about
this. There's a radio station... A local radio station. I don't know what one, but it's on the car. It's on the radio when we get a Nelly's car. It's all just like 90s throwback hip hop. And one of the songs
that sounds good.
One of the songs that popped up was My Name Is by Eminem.
Mm.
What? My Name Is.
How did that song ever be popular? How did that song launch a career of somebody who's like a multimillionaire?
Slim Shady.
That song is fucking awful,
dude. It's so weird. I was listening to Z88 the other day, and My Name Is. What's the Slim Shady one? That's not My Name Is. Slim Shady is like from the later Eminem.
No, that you're thinking of Would the Real Slim Shady.
I heard that, and I thought the exact same thing. I'm like, okay. How the hell is this guy?
With those two in particular, I almost think it's like the fact that they came out with these really weird music videos.
I have a lot of theories.
Propelled it.
I have a guess.
Yeah.
But
white male privilege, mediocrity.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that how violent and misogynistic he is has never been an issue. Like when he talks, he mentions in the song, The Real Slim Shady, where he's like, Will Smith doesn't have to curse in his records to sell. Will Smith doesn't have to curse to sell records. Well, I do. So like him and da da da. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, that's a totally backward analysis of that.
Yeah.
Eminem. Like, Will Smith can't curse in his records and be accepted because he's a black man. Mm. You're a young white guy at the time. And so it's easy for you
to get away with.
Yeah, to get away with things. I mean, it's a total question Marshall Mathers and his political analysis.
I don't think he's a very good rapper.
Yeah, that's another thing. He's just not very good.
Don't at me. Or at me. I don't give a fuck.
For real. And I'll go to war with anybody who thinks that because I've got so many examples of how people from his era that are so much better than him.
How do you differentiate between a fan and a stan?
I don't know, idiots on Twitter saying, yeah. Oh, someone just stunned.
I have this like test. It's like if somebody says that Eminem is their favorite rapper, I know that person's racist. Now, if you say he's your second favorite or he's just in your list,
but what if he's your second favorite behind the Beastie Boys? I like the Beastie Boys.
Kid Rock. Then yes. Then you're still racist, right? If it's and if Kid Rock's anywhere on your list, then you're probably racist.
Well,
right?
You're probably dumb.
Yeah, racist than, you know, other things. However, if Beastie Boys is the first, then you're still in that category.
The Beastie Boys are really good, though.
They're really good. It's just they're not number one. Because that just proves to me you haven't taken the time to actually listen to the culture.
Yeah.
There's an analysis behind it. However, I've been charging for those on Facebook. When, like, I'll make a statement, and, like, a white person, somebody asked me about Maniac McGee, because I said it was, like, liberal racism.
Is that the book?
The book, Maniac McGee.
I remember starting to read that, and isn't it about, like, football?
It's about, like, a homeless kid and his bringing peace to a town that's afflicted by racism.
Okay.
And it's about people just can't get along. Yeah. So it's nothing to do with, like, you know, structural inequalities or anything.
Do you guys remember Matt Christopher books? Kyle,
sounds
you remember
really
Matt
familiar.
Christopher? So it was all those baseball, and Matt Christopher, like, wasn't just one guy. It was, like, presumably, because he wrote, like, hundreds of books, and they're all about baseball. Like, there was one called The Kid Who Only Hit Homers. It was about a kid who only hit home runs. And so,
are they
like,
short stories?
And they're all, like, 100 pages or so. They're for, like, little kids. So I, like, read so many of those baseball books when I was a kid, and then there were a couple other books that, like, I had, and one of them was Maniac McGee, and I remember starting to read it, because, like, oh, this is a sports book, and I start reading, and I'm like, this isn't baseball, I'm not going to finish this book.
Oh, it's garbage. It's such garbage. I made this, like, statement about it, and somebody was like, can you expand on that? And I was like, if you PayPal me $20 for a Pick My Brain fee, then I will expand on it. And he did.
Nice.
And I made $20 for 15 minutes of work. It was awesome.
Nice.
How much back and forth did you have to do?
That was it. And that's been my way to shut down a lot of people on social media. Because it's like either they just are like, oh, that angers me that you value your time and opinion.
Yeah.
What kind of person
or they pay it?
Has $20 just to send to somebody to hear them?
Just talking about
get to their point.
IT professionals.
Who's like that into Maniac McGee?
It was a weird scenario. It was like somebody had asked, I guess somebody's kid had come home, and somebody I know, their kid was like, hey, this book's racist. So they asked about it, and I was like, yeah, I grew up with that. I think it is. And then that person, then one of their friends was like, oh, well, you need to expand on that.
All right, well, I'm glad I never read it.
Yeah, it sucks.
Nice.
Anyways, as we were saying about heroic blue screen of death, let's just jump into the top five.
Yeah.
I like when we can go off the rails, because I already don't like plan much for the show other than the top five and what the episode is about.
Yeah, compared to my other show, I just have the list and then I just kind of wing it.
I feel like I listened to On the Rocks one time and I was like, man, this is like really professional.
It's structured. Yeah. They have a game plan.
I was like, yeah, this is like,
we try. Well, because I can't. Okay, so I like this show because it has some structure. I can't stand shows that are just an hour, 90 minutes
of people just talking
and swearing and talking over each other.
That's the worst thing about podcasts.
I've stopped listening to all podcasts that do that. I used to listen to a bunch, and I didn't know.
And even now that we have our nice setup, which we've had for a long time, like, I can't. This is going to make me sound like a douchebag. I can't stand podcasts that
are bad quality.
Yeah.
Well,
I listen to one.
I know that not everyone can afford good mic setup, but
yeah, I guess I.
But I don't think it's.
It's not always the audio quality.
It'll take more how they interact with it.
Like people who just
talk over each other.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I listen to one. I mean,
was perfectly.
I listen to one where they talk over each other and the audio quality is like pretty garbage, but
yeah, when it's both, I can't deal with it. I can put up with
it. They need to try harder when the quality isn't good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one where I don't listen to every episode. But it would be one of my like top three go-tos if they would just fix that shit.
Yeah. And it's like, I just think, you know, we used to, like eating yeah. and, just a bunch of side noise and stuff. And I think we, you know, we've had our...
We're not perfect.
Yeah, and we probably sound a lot better now than we used to.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've listened to some of the old ones on the old recorder, and it's tough.
Listening to episode one of Beast Duels when I don't do Ann Kyle, it's just... The personality is kind of gone.
The Ann Kyle is... it's the heart of the show.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it's the anchor, I'd say.
I was going to be curious as to if Ashley would have joined the episode, how she would have fit into the intro.
Like, I wanted to be Ann Kyle and then the guest.
Ann Kyle, Ashley.
And just, they can just kind of like awkwardly try to decide what to do on the spot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's really accommodating and welcoming. That's for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyways, as Kyle alluded to, we're going to have some guests. Did you talk to your friend that you were talking about?
No.
Okay. sooner or later, our friend Ashley is going to be on the show. It just like literally hasn't worked out at all timing wise for, I think, the last 3 or 4 recording sessions in a row since we've talked to her about it. But yeah.
Would weekdays work better for her?
I don't know. I'll ask her. She's like a week on, a week off.
Sounds awful.
Yeah. She likes Nicole Kidman, as we've established.
And what was she likes somebody else now?
Cate Blanchett,
yeah.
She listens to the show. I hope she listens to this.
Well, yeah, a little background. When Nick was like, hey, do you remember our friend Ashley from way back?
And I
was like,
high school. Yeah, because I didn't know her in high school, but I'd mentioned you, and she's like, oh, yeah, I remember Sarah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember her. And then the first thing I said was, is she like really into Nicole Kidman?
Yeah, which is like the best description of her that I could come up with.
Well, Nicole Kidman is a fine actress.
Yeah. Oh, one of her movies is going to be coming up on my top 5 as we get into our top 5 examples of heroic PSOD, Kyle.
Nice. Yeah.
Transition time.
Are we going in?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Going in.
My number 5 is just Hank's reaction in Breaking Bad when he finds out something crazy is happening in the family. I don't know why I'm tiptoeing around the spoiler in this, but it's one of the more like most intense moments in TV. And the crazy thing about it is it's not like the way it happens. It's like it happens in a bathroom and he's going to the bathroom and he just happens to pick up this book. And it's like the most sort of dull thing, but us as viewers after watching the show for several seasons leading up to this moment that you knew was going to happen, it was just really intense. And his reaction, it's crazy. He's just kind of quiet, but yeah, that's my number 5. What about you, sir? Do you have a list or you don't have a list?
I have a very poor list. Listeners, admittedly, this is one of the very, very, very few that I just pull most of them from the site.
Yeah.
I like the direction that Kyle's going. This had an emotional effect on me. I should have probably tried to remember more of those.
Yeah.
So somewhat in that vein, the Powerpuff Girls.
Nice. Breaking Bad, Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah. There's like a lot of those moments in the Powerpuff Girls. I think because it draws off a lot of like Japanese animation, mm-hmm, and like anime, and that's kind of a recurring trope.
Yeah, anime characters have very good reactions to things happening.
Yeah, it happens several times. TV Tropes lists one as when Buttercup lost her security blanket, which is really awesome. That's one of the ones I remember the most because like Buttercup's supposed to be like the enforcer of the group.
The real just tough
showed
one.
Like her emotional center. So yeah. Powerpuff Girls, that's my number 5. Nick, what's your number 5?
What is my number 5? It's an interesting question.
Which you're going to get to in about a second.
I don't know. I was talking about Nicole Kidman. I'll go with it.
Yeah.
This is a movie that... it was on my radar because I really liked the other 3 movies by Yorgos Lanthimos. He's the guy who made Dogtooth, which is maybe the most disturbing movie I've ever seen. Then he made a movie called The Alps, and then he might be best known for The Lobster from a couple years ago with Colin Farrell, who he re-teamed up with for his most recent movie from last year called Killing of a Sacred Deer, which is, I guess you could call it the darkest comedy, because it's
not funny.
Like, it's kind it's kind of funny, but in the most messed up way. Are we doing, I don't want to spoil it.
Maybe don't spoil that one, because I, yeah, I haven't seen it.
Because it's brand new.
And like,
okay, so, I won't spoil it.
Of course. only my experience.
That's enough.
Yeah,
that's, no. I'll just say that there's a scene towards the end of the movie where it's just Colin Farrell sitting like naked in a chair, just completely traumatized to his whole world falling around him. This movie, it's like, it's a really disturbing movie. It's a really hard thing to sit through. And did you guys see Dunkirk?
I didn't see Dunkirk either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So one of the kids in Dunkirk who plays just like a sweet kind of, you know, patriotic young Brit who, you know,
I know the guy you're talking about.
Barry. One of our Irish listeners needs to let me know how to pronounce his last name, because I've never heard it said, and if I'm not gonna do it justice at all. Anyways, this kid, I liked him in Dunkirk. I thought it was, you know, it's a pretty small part, but it has a lot of emotional heft to it, and I thought he was good. And then I watched him in this movie, and this kid is incredible, because he plays two completely disparate. He's unbelievably creepy.
This is the spaghetti thing you posted the other day.
So I posted on Twitter, my favorite genre of movie is...
Did you make that? You put those images together? So,
it was like, my favorite genre of movie is sociopaths.
I don't even know.
Like sloppily eating spaghetti or something like that. And it was a clip from this movie and a clip from a movie called Buzzard. And I tagged A24, because Killing of a Sacred Deer is an A24 movie. And I tagged Joel Petroikas, who is the director of Buzzard from a couple years ago. And he actually responded with a screen cap of Gummo, which I watched part of. And I just... Harmony Korine's Gummo, which I watched maybe a half hour of, and I just couldn't.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, there's a lot of movies where creepy people eat spaghetti. A very sloppy bowl of spaghetti.
So, can we... First of all, what an incredible series of interactions. Second of all... can we just talk about how... And listeners, this is a direct plea. Follow at From Akron, Ohio, and follow at Sir Junior, C-I-R-J-R.
Yes, that's us.
Like, that's us. At C-I-R-J-R and at From Akron, Ohio. Like... Because I don't understand how we can get so many... we get, like, replies from celebrities. Like, we get, like, the occasional retweet from, like, huge accounts. And yet, my follow rate... Like, I clearly don't understand Twitter.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
That's just a shameless plug.
Yeah, I guess we never really plug our own Twitter.
My ego, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Anyways. Yeah, there's a creepy spaghetti eating scene. What else do you want?
I see your tag. Gold don't mold. Yep. Nod.
Oh, is that your description?
Yeah, my description is gold don't mold.
Nice.
Yeah. Guy, what's your number four?
My number four is from a game called Beyond Good and Evil. Incredible, underrated game.
Based on the Nietzsche work?
No. Maybe. I don't know. Have you played it, sir?
Mm-mm.
It's a sort of action RPG, but there's a moment in the game where you are out doing your thing and you come back to your home, which is like this at the base of this lighthouse, and it's completely destroyed and all the kids that live there are all missing, and there's a moment where the character you play as just has this like really somber soliloquy. She's like sitting up against a wall with her dog and telling him that he couldn't have done anything to save them, but you could tell that she's really just talking about herself, and it's like a really good speech that apparently was so good that it made it into the soundtrack of the game. Like, if you buy the soundtrack, they have a song, and her speech plays over it, and it's a pretty sad moment. But I guess she doesn't technically have the, like, moment where she breaks down or anything, but she has, like, she sits down and needs to take a moment to reflect and everything. So that's my number four.
If I may, from Wikipedia, Beyond Good and Evil, prelude to a philosophy of the future, or in the German, Jenseits von Gut und Bos, Vorspiel einer Philosophie der Zukunft, is a book by philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche that explains the ideas of his previous work. No, that expands on the ideas of his previous work. Thus spoke their Zarathustra. Is it supposed to be thus spoke or thus spake? With a more philosophical and polemical approach, it was first published in 1886, well before this video game.
Probably.
So, I'm just saying, there may be some copyright money owed to Freddy.
Yeah.
It can be either spoke or spake.
Ah.
Glad we cleared that up, sir.
Sir.
To continue the philosophical conversation, Batman the Animated Series.
Oh,
and
yes.
Just the moment.
Snaps.
Yes. Specifically in I Am the Night, where Batman visits Crime Alley, and it's his annual visit to Crime Alley where his parents died. And there's just like a moment where he just has this look of, you know, of shock. Mm. However, I really want to get to the point of the constant re-traumatization
of
that Bruce Wayne puts himself through.
Yeah.
And that Batman, like, content creators put us through by making us relive the death of his parents over and over and over again.
Yeah, they need to stop that.
Like, yeah, they need to knock it off.
Like, for real. Like,
I'm glad that they did away with the Uncle Ben thing. We've talked about it. I'm glad they cut out the whole Uncle Ben sitch.
Yeah.
With
I'm
Spider-Man.
Just like, I mean, plenty of people lose their parents and they don't become basically proletarian antagonistic millionaires who just beat up poor and working class people. I mean, people don't always have that kind of response.
Yeah. And very, very few people turn into that.
Yeah, very few people become Batman.
I feel like this is another case where, you know, we're really prioritizing his white male aggression and trying to play it off as like a mental illness or something other people don't go through. And really, there's just less of a problem with gadgets and the use of gadgets and the control of gadgets. And there's more a problem with the innate, like, social and cultural problems behind what creates somebody like Batman.
Speaking of Batman,
I'm trying to go high and low right now. So.
Speaking of Batman, a bit role in Killing of a Sacred Deer, the movie I just talked about. Alicia Silverstone.
Hmm. Nice. Whatever happened to her?
So yeah. I was saying, she's only in like one scene, really. Where's her Matthew McConaughey essence?
Yeah, seriously. I would easily go for that.
And I didn't like... It's a little bit like of a far out scene when she first... But her voice is so distinct. Yeah. I'm like, immediately. Yeah. I knew that she was in it, but I forgot.
Yeah.
As soon as you hear her voice, you're like, boom. That's Cher.
When you said Matthew McConaughey, for some reason, right before, like a split second, my brain slide.
I know
pulled
it's
up
called
Matthew Broderick first, and I was like, Matthew Broderick since.
I know it's called the McConaissance, but he doesn't deserve that.
No, he doesn't deserve.
No, it's the Matthew McConaugheyissance, and I want the Alicia Silver Stone Age. I just came up with it.
Nice.
But we need that. She was.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that's if you tweet that, I will immediately retweet.
Granted, she's. I think Clueless is the only good movie she's ever been in other than this, but she's so good in Clueless.
She's the best thing about it.
Well, yeah, but it's a great movie.
Paul Rudd's pretty cute in it.
Oh,
it's pretty dreamy, as usual.
It's a dreamboat. I mean, I really like Brittany Murphy.
Dreamboat Paul Rudd.
Yeah. Stacey Dash, pre-lunatic
she's
stage
easily,
of her life.
Well,
Stacey
Dash.
Yeah, Turk is in it.
Oh, yeah.
Turk is in it.
Yeah. He shaves his head. Anyways,
while I'm going through her filmography.
There's one. There's a scene in that movie where Turk shaved his head. Turk from Scrubs shaves his head. They're at a party, and Stacey Dash's character gets mad at him, and he's like, "Whatever, I'm shaving my head. I'm going to do what I do." And she's like, "Well, I'm going to call your mom," and he starts freaking out. Like his mom wasn't going to notice that he shaved his head when he came home.
Yeah, and not to mention, I mean, are they just referencing that character's abuse? Like, who is this mom? It's like the mom from Carrie.
Anyways, is it on me? Where are we at?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you just said some Batman.
I didn't pass the ball yet.
No, that's cool. I don't mind. I'm going to go with an episode of Community called Abed's Uncontrollable Christmas, and this is... Community, I've talked about it on the show. Nobody else who does the show has picked up on watching the show. So I'm going to keep doing it until you guys do. It's very trope-heavy, homage-heavy. This is a claymation-themed Christmas special where everything is claymation, basically because Abed has a mental breakdown of sorts because it turns out that it's kind of a spoiler for the show, but whatever, it's not a big deal. It turns out that like his parents got divorced like the very beginning of the show, and his mom like isn't going to see him for Christmas because she has a new family now. So he has a mental breakdown and imagines that everything they do is claymation. So it's a fun episode.
I've been, you know, I'm a huge fan of Atlanta, so that's Community is definitely. It's working like, its way towards me.
If you like Donald Glover, and he's granted, amazing. I'm saying this as someone who hasn't started season two of Atlanta yet. But if you like Donald
it's
Glover,
it's so good.
You gotta see Community. He's so good in it.
Did I ask you about Community versus Parks and Rec?
Yeah.
Can you describe their church? Like
I think Community has higher highs but lower lows. Mm. The best episode of Community blows away the best episode of Parks and Rec, but Community has it has some slogs.
Yeah, because we just recently started watching, or not just started, but we're like about to finish up Parks and Rec for the first time.
Community would be a very good one.
But we're on the sort of downhill slope of the end of Parks and Rec.
I didn't like the last season of Parks and Rec, but Community... the last couple seasons I didn't like, so
yeah,
you know.
Did you guys hear that Rick and Morty supposedly didn't get picked up for fourth season? Supposedly.
So it didn't get picked up yet because it hasn't even been written.
Yeah.
Yet. So I'm not.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Not pick up the show that everyone likes the most on Cartoon Network? Come on.
Yeah, I would find it hard to believe that the Community would be able to that. They could do that with everyone and what that show is able to accomplish. But I've heard that Cartoon Network or Adult Swim has a track record of
doing dumb things.
Yeah, like canceling shows that are popular.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think you can compare any of their other shows to Rick and Morty.
Big O. I mean, that's what I'm referencing. Big O's tragic cancellation.
Well, I don't even know what Big O is.
Nobody does. No, it's no. I'm not talking about Oprah.
All right. Kyle, you're number
three, I think. Number three is going to be in a game called Sly Cooper, Thieves in Time. And it's a moment when one of the characters you play as finds out that his girlfriend is one of the bosses you've been like tracking in the mission. And his reactions, it's kind of sad. Because he's sort of the loser of the group, and you've been following this boss for a while, and it's basically just this knight that paces around this level, and they're big and bad, and you think it's, they keep saying how they think it's a guy the whole time, and then the person jumps out of their suit at one point, and it's this guy's girlfriend, and it's his reaction to finding that out is really sad, but. But yeah, Thieves in Time, my number three. What about you, sir?
I need to start a list of all the video games you mentioned on here.
Because
whenever I'm like, oh man, I should get this would be like an old game or something, or like a quick.
This would probably be a PlayStation exclusive. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's on Xbox, but you can always upgrade to a PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3 at least.
Wow. I'm still saving for that VR machine.
Yeah.
Are you going to get one of those?
Apparently the PlayStation VR is hitting a price cut soon, or has recently saw one, so maybe. I tried the Vive a few months ago, and it was surprisingly way cooler than I thought it would be. I was afraid that I was going to throw up when I first tried it out, because I didn't want to buy a $300 VR kit and have it not work.
Well,
but
and this just goes to show how little I really like my list. yeah, a coworker of mine, he got a VR machine, and it was probably like 6 months ago. Uh-huh. I gotta say, and I'm not gonna name names, his productivity level, it's like just at work
because
just
of his, that.
It has dropped significantly his output, and I'm concerned with how the VR machines are going to affect our economy and our social life at this point.
It's like Ready Player One.
He was coming in early. He's coming in early, stuff like that. And once that started, I was like, nope, just staying up all night,
man,
playing VR.
That's crazy. See, I like VR, but I can't imagine playing an entire game in that way. Like, the one that I played was like a mini game, and I played it for 20 minutes and I was done. I can't imagine.
I guess he's playing like one of the like
Skyrim. I mean, you can play Skyrim. Yeah, you can play like 100-hour game. Yeah, that sounds ridiculous.
It just seems really intense.
Yeah.
So,
three.
So my number three is Game of Thrones, when Cersei directly confronts Tywin with her and Jaime's incest. Tywin's trademark stoicism cracks as he finally comes to realize that his family's claim to ultimate power, and hence his legacy, is predicated on a fiction that has been obvious to everyone except himself. There's a lot of analogies here to all the stuff I usually talk about. I'm just hubris.
I find it hard to believe that he didn't know. I mean, I guess he probably did know, and he just denied it, because he was a very smart dude.
And I wonder if it was really like the denial thing. Like, maybe hearing it from her, just like to his face, kind of really just
What a bad dude.
Man, terrible dude. I love his, when you first meet his character and he's just butchering a deer.
Yeah, cutting up a deer.
Because
you don't see him for the whole like first season of the show, I think. Which is pretty cool.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nick, what's your number three?
My number three, I'm going to go with, does anybody else have The Deer Hunter?
Mm-mm.
All right, I'm going with The Deer Hunter. Basically, what happens to the character of Nikki, Christopher Walken. Nobody's going to do their Christopher Walken. That's cool.
Mine's not that great.
Yeah, neither is mine. It doesn't compare to my Woody Allen, I'm going to say.
Well, nah. I'm not even going to try. But.
No, because now when I say wow, it sounds like
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
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 There's some...
Wow.
Some overlap or Owen lap?
Wow. What about Christopher Walken doing an Owen Wilson? Wow.
Or Evie doing... Evie's wow is probably the cutest.
Wow. Wow. Anyways, basically the Vietnam War
wasn't a good one.
Wasn't great. No. Yeah. There were some problems with it. I was watching 30 Rock yesterday, and there's a joke that Jack makes about how Cable Town is going to take over the Shinehart Wig Company. It's like a company in Philadelphia taking over a company in New York. That's like the United States losing a ground war in Vietnam.
Nice.
Anyways, the Vietnam War wasn't good for a lot of reasons, in large part due to up to and including what it did to the people who fought in it, including the character of Nikki in The Deer Hunter. He doesn't handle it well for a lot of reasons, and he basically just becomes a shell of a man.
Mm.
And it's kind of a brutal thing to have to watch.
Mm-hmm. Just a story about just some old steel town workers.
Yep. Yeah, it's not great to have to watch sitting on your couch. Glad I didn't have to actually be in it. So
it's true.
And Jan Gomes finally hit the ball in the air over the fence.
There goes the drought.
He's a Yanimal.
So are we tied?
No, we won. Walk-off homer.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
Weird.
live baseball update from a game that happened days ago.
Heck yeah.
Kyle, what's your number two?
My number two is from a movie I remember watching in a drive-thru theater, and this part kind of destroyed me as a wee lad. But it's the scene in Pocahontas when Kokowum gets shot, and Pocahontas' reaction to this is not a... she just gets quiet. I don't know. I don't remember actually how she reacts to it, but I just remember me as the movie watcher, it being a very intense moment. And I think that was the first time in like a Disney movie that I remember watching where someone dies just like right in front of you. But I am probably wrong. Actually, Lion King. But yeah, just Pocahontas' reaction to... I forget the guy who shoots him. John Smith was there, but...
John Smith
was fighting. He was fighting him, but then his little squirrely...
Didn't Mel Gibson play John Smith?
Yeah.
Man. I saw a really interesting meme about it the other day. Kind of like the M'Baku tweets from the other week. And it was like, are we really supposed to believe that Pocahontas would leave John Smith for this? And it just has a picture of like, the native guy that she loved or that really loved her.
Mm-hmm. Kokowum.
And this just scorned. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. No. That's my number two. What about you, sir?
My number two is it's from Legend of Korra, and I feel like it's a moment I've mentioned like many times. There's a season with Henry Rollins and he plays this character who's like really stoic.
Sorry, did you say Henry Rollins? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He plays this like really stoic character named Zaheer who is attempting to gain the power of flight. And to do that, he has to leave all of his mortal bindings and concerns behind. And then his fellow freedom fighter / terrorist Pillai dies. And he just has this like shocking moment of realization that he doesn't have any tethers to the mortal world, quote unquote. And then he just like, he can fly after that. So yeah. Before that is one of these blue screen of death things.
Mm-hmm.
Good moment. Legend of Korra, better than the original. Nick, what's your number two?
My number two, I'm going with the TV show The Americans, which Nellie and I started not too long ago. It's sixth and final season, kind of just started. So we've started from the beginning. We're trying to plow through so that hopefully...
Started from the bottom.
Yeah. Worked our way from the top. From the bottom up, we're trying to catch up so that we'll be caught up by the time it ends. Hopefully, I don't know. We'll see. With a lot of TV to cram into a few weeks, but anyways, it is about Kerry Russell and Matthew Reese are Russian spies for the KGB in the early 1980s Reagan era America, who are pretending to be the Americans, so much so that they're like. They're married and they have a couple kids who are real kids, and it's basically about all their wacky hijinks trying to commit espionage. There's an episode that we just watched where Kerry Russell is talking to a Nicaraguan girl who's kind of like she's on their side. The girl's like an aide to a congressional aide, basically, and Kerry Russell's telling her, hey, you need to like sleep with this guy so that we can exploit him so that we can steal this information. And the girl basically sets it up so that Kerry Russell can walk into, I think it's the governor's office or something like that. And, Kerry Russell walks in as she's about to steal the information. She sees the girl actively, participating in coitus with the guy. And she just like stops and freezes and stares because she not only realizes like, hey, I got this girl into this situation where she, you know, it's a pretty young girl having to seduce this guy for the cause. But not only that, she knows that eventually the girl is going to need to kill this guy to tie up any loose ends. So she's like in shock at all the, you know, trauma that she's going to end up causing this girl, for their cause. So it's interesting moment.
Yeah.
I started watching it, and I'm probably about 4 or 5, maybe 6 episodes. I'm probably further than that. I mean, I'm all the way up to the point where, you know, she has that, the main character's woman has this, like, thing from her past mm-hmm. with the person who trained her, and that all gets resolved, and I'm, like, mm-hmm. right at that point.
Okay.
It seems like there's a lot having to do with exploitation of women.
Yeah.
Like, how they're used in these, how they're exploited in these conflicts.
Yep. It's a good show. I like it. Kyle, what's your number one?
My number one is from the game Spec Ops: The Line. Have you heard or played this game, sir?
Mm-mm.
You should check it out. It's on 360. It came out in 2012, I think. But it's this military shooter, which you don't really hear these types of games having really good stories. But your team is in Dubai after this catastrophe happened, and you're supposed to. I think you're sent there to evacuate survivors and take down this guy who's lost his mind. But there's just way more story in this game than there really should be, and it is incredible. Hmm. And the twist at the end is just insane, and what it turns your character into is just, I don't want to spoil anything, but it is really good. And it was one of these games where back in the day, for On the Rocks, it was like episode 20 something or 30 something. It was a really beginning of our show. And I was just renting anything and playing, and we were just reviewing whatever. And this one just kind of came out of nowhere and
nice.
Surprised both of us. And it was really, really good. I think it's probably one of the most underrated games of that generation. But yeah, Spec Ops: The Line. Definitely recommended. Sir, what would be your number one?
So my number one is from the TV show The Boondocks, and I'm just going to read it again. Read the entry from TV Tropes, because I thought it was really awesome what happened. The third and probably... So in The Boondocks, Huey Freeman has 3 of these. The third time and probably Huey's biggest heroic BSOD ever is during Barack Obama's election, where Obama is asked about Huey Freeman, to which he responds that Huey doesn't stand for what he stands for, and he denounces, repudiates, and condemns him. This leads to Huey's indifference of Obama, where he retires from his role as a domestic terrorist. Of course, it doesn't go well with the public, who are in such awe of Obama at the time, that a simple "eh" from Huey draws the ire of a large crowd of black people, which leads to a national protest against Huey, where protesters burn an effigy of him. Because of this, Huey feels there is no room for him in Obama's America, so he decides to leave the country. However, his plans once again are thwarted because he can't get a ride. And while the Obama phenomenon has died down, Huey still remains retired throughout the rest of the season.
That show takes a different... I never got into the show, but I read the comic strip. The show apparently takes a pretty different...
How long was that show on for? Because I remember seeing like commercials for it, but I never really watched it. But it sounds like
it was
a lot older than to be around during that time. But
yeah, it was kind of a while.
That's cool.
Yeah. I feel you, Huey. Totally feel you. Nick, what's your number one?
My number one, it's not like a violent one. I'm going with a more emotional one. It's the end of Call Me By Your Name. And it's new, so I won't spoil it too much. But basically, just the last scene of the movie, and it actually the credits roll over this scene. It's just a character who, you know, he's had some significant thing happen to him, and he just like stares. He sits in front of a fireplace and stares into it, and it's like a 4-minute oneer of him looking straight forward, crying a little bit while a Sufjan Stevens song plays, and that's pretty much how the movie ends. But like, when I saw this movie in theaters, there's like a normal scene, and then the character walks over, sits in front of the fire, music plays, and the screen pops up like "Call Me By Your Name" on the left side, and he's on the right side, and then the credits start rolling on the other side of the screen. And people get up and leave. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you animals?
Yeah, it's the whole... Yeah, it goes all the way up to the credits.
I was so fucking angry. I was so mad.
Yeah, the people who walked out with it, we were all just like, what? The movie's still... Like, it's literally, the movie's still on.
Yeah, I was so pissed. Like,
it's so weird. I mean, is that like a... that movie almost proves, like, maybe credits just have this weird psychological prompt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People felt like they didn't need to see anything else. I'm like, it's still right in front of you.
That's the best scene, second best scene in the movie. Yeah, it was insane to me that anyone would leave during that. What is wrong with people? Don't deserve. That's what I said. I said people left and they didn't deserve a movie that good.
Why do you think the filmmakers decided to handle it that way, though? Have it going on during the credits.
During the credits, I don't know.
It's interesting.
I guess. I mean, there are other movies that have similar things.
The thing I could think of is just when Marvel or superhero movies have like that stinking
end credit.
Yeah. But like this seems different than that a little bit.
And there's been times where there's been like almost like a dedicated box for that scene, like that just
that's
is right there in the credits.
Like,
whereas this was different to me because it's even more so than that. I mean, it's the entire
screen. Like, yeah, it's not
so
like
it's
half
like,
of it's black.
So it's even to me more than the prompt of like you might see a little bit of a clip or like interspersed clips in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was really bizarre.
They didn't have
watching that.
I guess they didn't have to do it that way. I guess
it was better than showing me a little tiny box.
Oh yeah,
I was like, this is much improved.
I mean, I guess my point is they could have done it just without the credits at all of him sitting there throughout the entire duration of that song, and maybe that would have been better. I don't know, but as it is, I think it works really well. It blows my mind that anyone would leave during that scene. I don't understand it at all.
Yeah.
I love the crap out of that movie. I thought it was so good.
I miss some Pixar movies doing outtakes during the...
Yeah,
they stopped doing that. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
The new Pixar short. I can't wait for it.
Yeah.
Bow.
The art of the... And with the...
The story is about...
Awesome.
What the story is about sounds so sad.
It's about a dumpling?
It's... We'll see.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out when Incredibles 2 comes out. Anyways, Heroic BSOD... Thank you, Paul, for the suggestion.
Does he have a list? Did he suggest without a list?
I think
that should
did.
Be a.
It should be a prerequisite, which we've said, but
not this time.
Paul from the UK has been sanctioned.
Yep. Anyways, I've been Nick.
I've been Sir.
And Kyle.
And join us again next week when we'll be stuck
on the tropes
of So Short It Rocks.